What up, what up, what up, everybody? It's Full Court Press, and we're back after another two-week hiatus. A lot on the agenda today. Shaquille O'Neal retires, the NBA playoffs are underway, and one Jay Triano is lifted in of his job in Toronto. As always, to my left, Mr. Matt Hayes, and to my right, Josh Lewinberg. How are you doing today, guys?
Just fabulous.
I'm doing quite well.
You're doing well?
That's not as good as fabulous, but
yeah. Fabulous.
Well is okay.
Tremendous.
Well sounds like someone that's making money, though.
Yeah, well, in that case, I should change my answer
to not well.
I don't want it to be misleading. I don't want people to think that I'm making any money right now.
Yeah, that's fair.
Pay me.
So, gentlemen, I know you were doing well, but you're going to feel a lot better. I'm going to give you the opportunity to cleanse yourselves of a little bit of pent up stuff. You want to apologize for anything this week?
I really do.
Okay, well, let me cue you up some music, Maddie, and as always, we'll start with you.
Thank goodness, because this apology has been really eating away at me for quite some time now. And I'm going to apologize to Dirk Nowitzki and the rest of his Dallas Mavericks teammates, whom when I made a playoff bracket back in early February, I had them losing first round. I think I had them losing in five games. I don't even remember who. And I doubted them, their depth, their talent, their size, and I doubted Dirk, and I'm sorry.
He's sorry.
We're really sorry.
We are really sorry for Matt Hayes. Josh, you got anything for me?
I don't think I do. I'm not sorry for shit.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Josh. As always, Josh Lindenberg, the most unapologetic human being I know. I'm also going to apologize to one, Dwayne Wade. I've been hard on you, Dwayne. I've posted many, many, I don't know, hateful things about you on Twitter and Facebook alike.
They really have been defamation.
I couldn't get down with you, but after last night's game, I saw how much you wanted to will that team to a victory, and you're a champion at heart, Dwayne Wade, and I won't take that away from you ever again. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Dwayne Wade.
No apology for Chris Bosh?
No, never.
No, never.
He's a fossil.
Chris Bosh can sit on it. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean.
Nice one. And moving along. Let's talk about that, though. Let's talk about a little bit Chris Bosh. Talk a little bit NBA playoff action.
Alrighty.
What did you like? I saw yesterday we had LeBron James. He said he was going to come out. Attack mode. I thought that was very evident in yesterday's game. LeBron for the
definitely
first half.
Early.
And Dwayne Wade could be included in that category. The Heat were getting to the basket, and there was not really a big response for them.
LeBron's first dunk, that two-hander, I had no idea he was even going to get to the rim.
It's ridiculous.
And then explosive.
And I think he might have topped. I don't know if he did, but he came very close to tying Kevin Durant's dunk in the playoffs against.
Very similar.
It was pretty close, and I thought it had a little bit more to it. No, a little bit more in your face.
Well, I think LeBron is just a little more in your face than Durant is, just personality wise.
True,
a little bit.
Josh, what do you think about that dunk? The aggressiveness, you like it?
I like when they're aggressive when they choose to be aggressive, and the Miami Heat are almost the team equivalent of Vince Carter right now in that. It's so evident when they are trying to score versus coasting and maybe not trying as hard to score, which we've seen from Vince Carter for years.
I find a lot
years.
Of that comes off their defense, though, because they get a lot of those dunks off turnovers,
especially
in this series.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's no one better than the Miami Heat on the fast break.
Well, it's
break,
almost like
much.
Watching the Team USA. As soon as the ball's turned over, someone's getting a dunk. You don't know who it is.
That much we know.
Getting.
But how about when they go up by 6 points, 8 points, 10 points, more than that, where's the sense of urgency? And that's when you see the jumpers from Chris Bosh. That's when you see LeBron a little bit more passive, Wade a little bit more passive than they should be. It's when Dallas cuts into that lead, which happens fairly consistently. It seems like that's all Dallas can do these days is come from behind. When the game is close, that's when LeBron and Wade have that sense of urgency, and that's really the only time that you see them in that half court playing the way they do when they're on the break with that same intensity, with those same dunks that you talked about earlier. That's when you see Miami take that next step, and they really need to.
Can you blame them? Can you blame this team? They score so easily in transition, and they can put up so many points so quickly that for them not to become complacent is just about impossible. And I know that it's hard to watch pro athletes coast like that, but wow, Miami, when they want to score, when they want to put 10 points on the board, and
no
and
one flips the switch
you,
better than
exactly.
Them.
But you got to look how many minutes those guys play too. They're going to get tired. They can't play at that tempo all the time.
But
they're
robots.
Tired.
But yeah, they're asking. They've always asked LeBron James to play at that tempo. Same with Dwayne Wade. Chris Bosh isn't in the same league, but those two guys.
Yeah, this is the NBA Finals, though. This is a whole other league of just defense intensity. You can't play 40 minutes at the intensity that's required to play in the NBA Finals.
See, for me, Josh brings up an excellent point, which is that they sit back when they start to get leads, and I think that what you start to see is that aggressiveness tails off big time.
Oh, it does.
LeBron and D-Wade, you can see the points in the paint in the first half were ridiculous in Game 3, and then as soon as they start going up, what happens? LeBron James starts to hang around the three-point line and start shooting contested threes. Dwayne Wade starts doing the pull-up jump shot. They start all of a sudden deferring to Mike Bibby to shoot threes. Mario Chalmers had 4 three-pointers in last night's game, which I thought was phenomenal for him, but he shouldn't be even getting that many shots. I don't care how
open. Some of them are pretty open, though.
Yeah, some were open, but I just don't see the point of Mario Chalmers touching the ball so many times when you can dribble drive and penetrate with LeBron James or Dwayne Wade.
That's the thing. You dribble drive and penetrate and kick to your shooters.
The thing was, though, is that these guys are getting fouled. They're getting hacked. There's no need. Kick out to your shooters, be that as it may. That's great. You don't have these guys doing that. They're not kicking out. This is just surrounding.
You just said Mario Chalmers hit 4 threes.
Yeah, Mario Chalmers did hit 4 threes.
LeBron
but they
James,
did that through
did
circulation, not through penetrating
half.
And kicking. That was just through ball movement. That's from double teams going to different guys, and Mario Chalmers just getting open for some reason. Mario Chalmers got open in game one Terry missed the, I don't know.
The 1 3 he hit, too, was that buzzer beater where he just chucked up the runner.
Well, that was, yeah, that's not a guarded three. That's just, and first of all, that
was
a
yeah.
court violation.
And technically,
violation.
That was the difference. I don't like looking at it like that. I mean, yeah, it was a two-point game in the end. So you could say, well, that three was the difference.
Three throws for Dallas.
No, exactly.
Well, I, my assistant coach used to say there's always 10 points on the floor and just loose balls.
Yeah.
And you could look back at so many plays.
And that was halftime. Anything could have happened at that point, especially because we've seen how Dallas plays once they narrow that gap, once they tie the game. I think they had a small, short-lived lead in the third quarter at some point. They need to play with a sense of urgency when they're down by 1, 2 points, the same way they do when they're down by 8, 10 points, and that's the problem here. But at the same time, the dynamic that we're seeing here is great for us, unathletic guys sitting behind a mic. Sorry, Matt, I know you're semi-athletic.
Semi.
But for me,
as
an unathletic dude in front of the mic, just talking about what other dudes are doing, it's a fantastic dynamic knowing that even if this series goes 3-1 in favor of Miami, it's not over. It will not be over because in one...
Whoa.
It will not be over until it's over, because on one end you have a team that has shown in the past that they get complacent.
See, I'm gonna
and that
disagree.
They don't. Well, then wait until I'm finished and disagree. But they they have a hard time playing when they have the lead in series, in games. And then on the other side, you have a team that's shown a tendency to play even harder and to come back from these big deficits. So I'm not going to throw in the towel for Dallas at any point in this series, no matter how bad it looks. And right now, it doesn't look that bad.
Well, Dallas has a couple things that they're stacked up against, which makes it very difficult for them. One is that the Miami Heat have not lost back-to-back playoff games this entire year.
Correct.
They have not lost. So when you talk about complacency, they might become complacent in that one game, drop it, but they don't lose two in a row. They made that very clear. The second thing is that there has never been a Game 7-1 on never, ever, other than a Bill Russell team, one Bill Russell team for the Celtics that won a Game 7 on the road for an NBA championship. In order for the Mavs to win this, let's be real, they've got to take this to 7 games. That's the only way it's going to be possible now. They just lost Game 3. That Game 3 is so pivotal. They were talking about on PTI the other week that I think it's some figure on 80 to 85% of NBA playoff series in total have been decided upon the third
game. The most ridiculous stat I think I've ever heard, certainly the most telling in this case, was since the NBA Finals format has gone to 2-3-2 in 1985, there's been 11 years where the NBA Finals has been tied up at 1-1. Out of those 11 years, the Game 3 winner has won all 11 championships.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
It's incredibly telling. So, yeah, a little bit of pressure on the line the other night, and...
So for all Miami gamblers out there, try to give some odds there. Try to make some money back.
Yeah, good luck.
Because you probably lost some if you had
it. It was a huge game. And as much as I want to make it seem like it's not a big deal, that Dallas can still come back and it's not over, at the same point, I'm not going to sugarcoat things. That was an absolutely massive game and an absolutely massive win for the Heat.
So let's stick there because we've talked a little bit about the Heat. Everybody kind of has a general idea of how they operate. What's going on with Dallas, though? Because I understand that Dirk's the offense. I understand how prominent, how clutch he's been. And in Game 2, he finished off Chris Bosh with a similar kind of play. But what were those two last possessions for them? They get two. One is right after Chris Bosh sinks the game-winning basket. They go down out of a timeout, and Dirk gets the ball. He gets double-teamed in the high post and ends up basically whipping the ball out of bounds, trying to find Jason Terry open. There's no outlet pass for him. There's nothing. There's no secondary guy. He just has to chuck something up. And then the second shot was kind of the exact same thing, which is Dirk just doing his patented, I'm going to just shoot this over top of you.
You got to put that on his teammates, because it's no mystery that Dirk's going to try and get his open shot. You can put it on both, because
Carlizzle?
If I'm a teammate of Dirk Nowitzki,
Carlizzle,
I know he's getting double teamed. So you have to get open for that. You know a double team is coming. Everybody, my grandma knew that Dirk was going to get doubled. And if you're a teammate, you have to get to a spot where you're available. You just have to, because you know there's a double team coming, and they don't. And like you said, he was forced to chuck it pretty much out of bounds. And you blame the coach. The coach could have drawn up something a little bit better.
I just don't know why they don't employ that pick and pop, pick and roll that they have going with J.J. Barea and him. Like, why J.J. wasn't on – I don't even know if J.J. was on the floor for that final shot.
Well, Kidd would have been, wouldn't he?
No, well, Kidd's effective in the pick and roll too, but the thing is, though, is J.J. Barea is just so absolutely dynamite quick that they lose Dirk's body because they're trying to watch J.J. He's so ridiculous.
His handle is unreal.
I can't even remember anybody in the NBA being as quick as J.J. Barea. Do you, Josh? Like, just that pure
– Allen Iverson used to be pretty
quick. Yeah, Allen Iverson was pretty quick, yeah. He's pretty fluid.
I think he's deceivingly quick, Brad. Yeah. I think he's quick with the ball. Like, the way he dribbles the ball, I don't know if in the open floor, like, you're going to look at LeBron's way quicker. Like, in
it's a Barbosa type of quickness.
Yeah, exactly.
Once he gets going, it's hard to stop him. The problem with Dallas's offense right now, I want to say it's a little bit predictable at this point. They seem to have the same play that they run pretty consistently, where they
80% of the time.
Yeah, where they have their guard, either Kidd, J.J., Terry, whoever be, bring up the ball. Then for 10 seconds or so, you try to work that pick and pop, pick and roll with Dirk and try and get Dirk the ball. And if and when that fails and you can't get Dirk the ball, that's when they have JT go into some kind of a freestyle mode. And that doesn't work for them. It doesn't. That's the way he's played his whole career. And a lot of the time he is good out of control. But we've seen the inconsistency from the Jet over the last couple weeks, and that plagues them. And to Miami's credit, you can't play better defense against Dirk than what they played in Game 3. I mean,
the defense has been phenomenal on both sides.
Hand in the face, you do what you can to stop him, but the defense starts long before he gets the ball. It's denying him the ball, and that's what's causing...
And it's the offside help, where they are when he gets the ball. Where they are before he gets the ball, because you know where the ball is going. It's not a mystery, so you have to be available.
That's what really shows you how positive or how great these guys are offensively in the NBA. Because you look at some of the D that's going down here, and it's just this phenomenal defensive series.
And this will be hard for me to do because, well, I hate him. I hate his guts. But Chris Bosh has been doing a really good job of just being off the ball defender when Dirk gets it. He doesn't necessarily.
I refuse to acknowledge that.
But you see where he positions himself. He's a 6'11 guy. He comes right to the middle of paint and he makes himself known. So Dirk can't.
You mean the same guy that got absolutely abused by a guy with a broken left finger, went to his left hand and scored on him for a game winning basket? That guy's playing great D.
Offside. Listen.
Stay on the offside, Chris Bosh. That's where you'll remain. Another guy playing great D, though, Sean Marion.
Amazing.
Can we give some props
defense
to that guy?
Oh, give him oodles.
He's scoring
props.
Points, too. Although he's getting a little too loosey-goosey last game.
Well, he's so erratic with his offense that he's not going to be on every night with his offense. But his defense, like you said, Giannis, is...
He's holding LeBron James to somewhere around like 23, 24, 25 points a game so far these playoffs. And he's pretty much matching him on the offensive end. He's been unreal, Sean Marion. Tons of props to you. Tyson Chandler as well. I think the problem really lays right now for Dallas, anyways, is to get more production out of Jason Terry and J.J. Barea. Those two guys have been really, really integral for them to get to this point, and right now they've kind of faded away a little bit. And like Josh said,
they're both too inconsistent.
Yeah. Jason Terry, absolutely. He's built a career on being this kind of streaky shooter, but as for right now, he's got to try to find a little bit of consistency in his game. He did hit a couple big threes yesterday coming up off the bench in the third quarter, but...
That seems like the only way they stay in games, though, is just big threes. You see Stevenson hit a three, and then Peja hits a three.
Peja's another guy, actually. They rested him the whole second half of the second game.
Oh, he got exposed defensively.
Yeah, he's a huge liability at this point. It's hard for me to watch because it seems like anything that Miami gets is so easy for them. We talked about this earlier. They just turn on the switch, and it looks like they can get whatever shot they want, whereas then you see Dallas on the other side, and Dirk has to work for everything he gets so much harder than anything LeBron gets. And when that fails, and it, like I said, it has because they've been doing a good job of denying him the ball, then that's when it comes to the three-point shooting. J.J. chucking it. Terry chucking it.
You got to look at, though, that Dallas isn't...
Kid.
Dallas doesn't have the same kind of assets that Miami has in terms of guarding those guys. Like, you look at... Matt and I were laughing yesterday because wasn't there a point where Dwayne Wade was covering Peja Stojakovic was covering Dwayne Wade?
Yeah.
It was ridiculous. It was, like, right from the top of the...
Well, I was yelling the whole time. And then D-Wade shot a pull-up.
Yeah, he shoots a pull-up
like,
over.
What are you doing?
Yeah, just... I don't know. It looks pretty easy when you're being guarded by Jason Kidd and...
I saw Chris Bosch blow by Stojakovic in the first half going right from about 6 feet from the rim.
And how about that Mahimi,
too? He went his wrong way.
Mahimi. Listen, Jason Kidd is not the fastest dude around. We know that. Maybe he was 10, 15 years ago. But I'm going to give him some props. And I've done this on this program before as well as on the Sports Radio Jacks. He is one of the more underrated defensive players in the league. And we've seen that, if not this season, then during the postseason. They put him on Kobe Bryant at times. They had him on Westbrook. I saw him on LeBron at points yesterday. He's strong and he's smart. So anything that he lacks in the quickness side of things, he's going to make up with his overall defensive awareness.
That's excellent.
And Dallas has been one of the more underrated defensive teams all year. And we've given credit to Marion. We've given credit to Tyson Chandler. But credit Kidd as well.
He's very, very understanding of his role. He knows he's not going to block shots. So he works his feet are very, very good. They're not even that fast. He always seems to make the right step, the first step, and he does a good job of keeping guys in front of him, knowing that he's not going to really alter the shot a whole lot as long as he's just there to be a presence.
He's a great help defender, too. I thought there is an interesting contrast between him and Miami's point guard, Mike Bibby. Mike Bibby was a big-time prospect. He came out of Arizona after winning an NCAA title. He spent many years Sacramento as an all-star and as a pseudo all-star.
Never made an all-star team.
No.
In fact, I was just about to say, I think he might be one, if not the best player. Not the best player, but one of the best players to never make an all-star team.
That's surprising. I didn't know that he
would
never made
be
one.
Up there.
Yep.
I thought he had.
Oh, in his prime, with Sacramento, he was no all-star team.
No all-star teams for.
I might be wrong. I'm going to check it out.
Yeah, that's a good...
I would wager.
I can't ever picture him
in an
all-star
jersey. I don't think I've ever been sorry for anything, so
that might
be
a first.
I really can't. I can't picture Mike Bibby in an all-star jersey. That being said, though, you look at how those two guys' career paths have gone. Mike Bibby has not altered his game or changed it whatsoever from the guy that was in Sacramento. Yeah, exactly. And that his body has started to deteriorate. He's gotten worse. He's not as quick as he used to be. He doesn't have a first step anymore. He can't create his own shot. So he's just become this, like, spot shooter, and I just don't really understand that. When you look at a guy like Jason Kidd, who's drawing fouls and doing great help defense, and I know he was a way better player. It's not fair to compare the two. Kidd is maybe the greatest point guard of his generation in two different generations, in the 90s and in the 2000s. He's a pretty incredible guard.
No all-star games.
No all-star games for Mike
Bibby. On Bibby,
though, sense.
You say you look at him as a spot-up shooter.
Makes sense
it's
no
kind
sense.
Of the role he's been put into at this point with
those
big three.
No, but that's all he can
three.
Do. They don't even, like, when he brings the ball up, even. You saw last game, when he's trying to bring the ball up. He gets trapped by J.J. Barea and turns the ball over and throws the ball away to him. I was like, he can't play point guard anymore. He's completely a plug. He's got no attribute to that team other than hitting the off spot up tray. But you don't even want he's what down the list on that team of who you want to shoot a three.
Well, yeah, you'd
there's
rather
Chalmers. You'd rather even have Eddie House, Mike Miller, LeBron, D Wade. I honestly would take any one of those guys shooting a three over
Mike
over Bibby. Mike
Bibby can be exhibit A as to why I'm even more impressed with someone like Jason Kidd, who's able to do the most with what he has left. And you see Mike Bibby and what's deteriorated for him, and really nothing's changed other than he's slower and he's less athletic than he already was. But if you have that court awareness, that intelligence that Jason Kidd has on the floor, it doesn't really matter how much quicker you are than your counterpart, because you're gonna be right there when it comes to making the right play, right? So
yeah,
I'm impressed with Kidd. I've been impressed with Kidd all playoffs.
I think
really.
Kidd's one of the only reasons they're even able to hang tight in this series. He's been the two guy. He has. He's been replacing Terry as the number two guy on that team. So, we've got now it's Miami 2-1. The next game will be played tomorrow in Dallas. So, Dallas, we've all got Dallas winning that game. Does anybody have the Heat winning two straight at this point?
No, I'm going to go with Dallas.
Home?
Yeah. I have Dallas.
Yeah, just everything in me wants Dallas to win. I don't want to fight it.
It's one of those things where even at the beginning of this series, I refuse to give a prediction. If I had to give a prediction, if I had to place a bet, the gambler in me would say bet on Miami. That's the smart thing to do, but I can't. My heart.
Bet on Miami in game four or over the series?
Both, really. I mean,
oh,
but my heart, I'm not making a prediction because my heart won't allow me to. I can't bet on a team that I want so badly to lose, so I'm just not going to do it. I want Dallas to win. I have no prediction.
That's, full court that's press, where say. Vendettas and biases come right to the forefront.
Everyone has biases. It's the people that are honest about it that are the legit.
And not everybody
that
is
the ones
like
that aren't listened to and sued. Okay, so anyways, here's I feel like we've triumphed so far. So here's Triumph from Wu-Tang Clan. But y'all thought y'all wasn't gonna see me. I'm the Osiris of this shit. Wu-Tang is here forever, motherfuckers. This 97, I, my niggas and my niggerettes. Let's do it like this. I'ma rub your ass in the moonshine. Let's take it back to 79. I form atomically. Socrates' philosophies and hypotheses. Can't define how I be dropping these mockeries. Lyrically perform armed robbery. Flee with the lottery. Possibly they spotted me. Battle scars, showgun. Explosion when my pen hits. Tremendous. Ultraviolet shine, blind forensics. I inspect you. Through the future, see millennium. Killer bees sold 50 gold, 60 platinum. Shackling the masses with drastic rap tactics. Graphic displays melt the steel like blacksmiths. Black Wu jackets, Queen Bees, East and Gunson. Rumble with a Roman tear gas, lace the function. Heads by the score, take flight inside a war. Ticks hit the floor, die hard fans demand more. Behold the bold soldier, control the glow slowly. Proceeds the blow, swinging swords like Shinobi. Stomp grounds and bam, footprints of solid rock. Who got it locked, performing live on your hottest fly. As the world turns, I spread like germ. Bless the globe with the pestilence. The hard-headed never learn. This my testament to those burned. Play my position in the game of life, standing firm. On foreign land, jump the gun out the frying pan. Into the fire, transform into the ghost rider. A six pack in the street car named Desire. Who got my back in the line of fire holding back? What? My peoples, if you with me, where the fuck you at? Niggas is strapped and they tryna twist my beer cap. It's going to churn for the bad seed from bad sperm. Herb got my wig fried like a bad perm. What the floods? Clots? We smoke pot and blow spots. You wanna think twice? I think not. The higher lung ain't got to tell you where it's coming from. Guns and Navarone tearing up your battle zone. Rip through your slum. I twist darts from the heart, try to intrude, loop my voice on the LP. My team's on the slang rock, certified chatterbox. Vocabulary dawn and talking, tell your story walking. Take cover, kid, what? Run for your brother, kid, run for your team. And your six can't rhyme groupies, so I can squeeze with the advantage and get wasted. My deadly nose reigns supreme, your board is basic compared to mine. All right, thank you, Wu-Tang Clan, as always.
Welcome back.
Welcome, welcome, welcome back. So now we're going to skip into a little segment we like to call 24-second shot clock.
Ooh, my favorite segment.
Yeah, it's most people's favorite segment. I'm going to give each of these guys 24 seconds to answer a couple questions about the NBA, whatever, basketball-related things. They're going to share their opinions, and as always, I get the final word because that's just how things roll.
He has control of the computer.
He hits me.
Yeah, I do. I hit them all.
You wouldn't dare hit me.
No, you're rather large. I don't think I could reach up there, actually.
My shoulders.
Matt's 6'9", for those of you that don't know. So let's start this off with Mr. Pippen. Scotty boy, making waves in the last week or so. We're a little late to this story, but we still have opinions on it nonetheless. So Scotty Pippen says that LeBron James and not Michael Jordan is the greatest player of all time. Go figure. His ex-teammate of the air one, or of his airness decided to go with LeBron. And while a couple people such as Isaiah Thomas and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar have come out with their vehement disposition on this fact, we're going to ask now Matt Hayes what he thinks. Well, Matty, who you got, LeBron or Jordan?
Well, it's a no-brainer. I can give you six reasons why I picked Jordan over LeBron, and those are obviously all of his rings. Until LeBron wins a ring, he should not be in the conversation for best ever. It's not even close, if you ask me. You can throw any stat number you want at me. He hasn't won anything. Great, he's got a gold medal. Great, he's got a lot of points, a lot of assists, and a lot of rebounds. And Scottie Pippen, get your head checked. Even if you do think that, shut your mouth. What's the point of even saying that? Are you bored? Do you need the controversy? James, go to hell.
Josh?
I'm going to quote Matt Hayes. You can throw as many stats at me as you'd like, so I will. How many championships did Michael Jordan have at age 26, which is how old LeBron James is right now?
Zero.
Zero. How many MVPs did he have?
Zero.
Two. Same amount. Same amount. Guessing. So listen, I hate LeBron James. I love Michael Jordan. I think Michael Jordan is the best player of all time. I don't think LeBron James will ever be the best player of all time, but I'm playing devil's advocate here. Scottie Pippen was merely expressing an opinion. He's entitled to do so. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, shut the hell up.
Wow.
He was being very disrespectful to poor Scotty, too. Very disrespectful.
Kareem was a little disrespectful. Limited perspective was the term.
There was a bunch of them, too. I think
yeah,
I have a
couple.
He did tear him apart.
He tore him up. As he rightfully should have.
I would advise you to do a little homework before crowning Michael or LeBron. Homework, really? Kareem, come on.
Well, Kareem's from a different time. He saw more players. That I agree with Kareem. When we saw him talk after... We saw him talk on ESPN the other day, Kareem, and he talked about the guy that I agree with him is the greatest player of all time, someone I didn't watch play. I did watch Michael. Michael was the greatest that I've seen so far individually. I think LeBron is phenomenal. I understand where Scottie's coming from in terms of he is the next guy that came down the chain of the Kobe chain, the Jordan chain, in terms of the number one NBA superstar of his time. That being said, yeah, it was Bill Russell. Bill Russell is the greatest player of all time. They said it. The great saying is the ring is the thing. He won 8 straight and 11 overall. I just don't see how they changed the rules for Bill Russell. He was a defensive phenom, and he stopped and he played against Wilt. And he beat Wilt every single freaking time.
So, in response to the question, LeBron or Michael, you
Michael,
pick Bill?
Hands down. I take Bill, and then I take Jordan. And then
this is what
LeBron
Kareem did, technically.
That is kind of what Kareem did. So, I'm going in the Kareem vein. But anyways, let's move on from that one. So, number two, Kemba Walker declined a one-on-one interview with a one-on-one workout with Jimmer Fredette for the Sacramento Kings. His agent said, quote-unquote, Kemba has nothing to gain. Which one of these guys is going to have the better NBA career, Josh Lundberg?
I'm confused. Did he not want to play against Jimmer, or does he not want to play for Sacramento, or is it a combination of the two?
I think it's a combo.
Maybe he just refused to work out. I don't know. He's right. He has nothing to prove. He can work out. He can show his skills, but it's not about necessarily comparing him to anyone else at this point. If he beats Jimmer in a one-on-one game or loses to Jimmer, what does it prove? What's the difference? At this point, he just has to prove to be the best Kemba that he can be, and that's going to speak for itself.
Matty, this is your boy Kemba, so be careful what you say.
And he's listening.
I agree with Josh for the most part. He has nothing to prove. He proved everything he had to in the Big East tournament and the NCAA tournament. He can't get his draft stock any higher. He's maybe fifth or sixth overall at best. Working out with Jimmer Fredette's going to, what, make him a worse shooter in some people's eyes, but he's not going to get any higher in people's eyes anyway, so there's no point in doing that. There's no benefit. Jimmer's the only guy that can benefit from that. I think Kemba will have the better career, that being said.
That being said, Kemba Walker with the better career. Yeah, I agree. I agree with the agent. Kemba, there's no reason to do this. Put yourself on a national stage and look like you're worse than Jimmer Fredette when in reality, there's no way. Like, you'd rather have Kemba. I think that there is a case to be made, though, who could have the better career. I think it'll be Jimmer because I think he'll fit his role a little bit better than Kemba. I think Kemba will have a little bit tougher transition, not being the star of his team and the go-to shot. All right, today it's going to be a little short on this on the shot clock because we got a couple other things to cover. But so we'll go number three. Dwight Howard said he's looking to make his own path and not follow in the shoes of one Mr. O'Neal.
Then stop stealing his nickname.
That's true. Stop stealing his nickname. You've been doing it for years, my man.
Well, Shaq gave up his nickname. He gave him all up.
No, he didn't. When he retired, he even said the one, the only, never duplicated,
he
never
did
replicated.
He did retire it, though.
He retired the nickname, yeah. So, Matty, is Dwight Howard teasing everybody, or do you think he's legit that he wants to stay in Orlando? Go.
I think he's legit that he wants to stay in Orlando now. I think once he's a free agent and there's a lot of dollar signs being tossed at him and a lot of people promising him different things, things might change. As of right now, I think he's legitimate saying what he said. I think he honestly believes it. But 10 months from now, I would really like to see another interview with Dwight Howard and see what he says about it. It'll probably be roughly the same answer, but again, a lot can happen.
Joshy. I'm going to disagree with Matt. I think it's a lot of lip service, to be honest. We've heard it from Chris Paul, too. Chris Paul said that he wants to stay in New Orleans. I don't believe that for a second.
Yep.
I don't believe that for a second. We heard it even from Carmelo whispering every once in a while, yeah, I want to stay in Denver. How did that work out?
Yeah.
Lip service. He has someone behind him at all times telling him what to say, telling him the politically correct answer. And, yeah, he's going to say, I want to stay in Orlando. I'm sure he wants to stay in Orlando. Not actually. He gone.
Hey, Dwight Howard, if you want to stay in Orlando, sign the max contract that they're offering.
If you want to stay in Orlando, stay in Orlando.
Yeah, no kidding. Like, I'm tired of these superstars parading around like they trying to win on both sides. For me, they're men without country. I want nothing to do with them.
Now, before we go to one of the most dominant big men of all time, I actually want to give some pub to one of the most dominant front guest security guards of all time. Ravi Singar of Centennial College.
He makes this show go.
It's true.
Are you trying to figure out which campus this is?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're the Danforth campus.
Danforth.
What?
He's actually joined the Twitter family. He is Ravi underscore security on Twitter, and I'm highly recommending that you follow him.
He gets us into this booth every week, folks.
Not and, only that, I'm, he keeps just... the ground safe.
That's
he
true.
Really does.
That's true.
He stopped us from throwing a football in the parking lot.
For our own safety,
for
might
safety
I add.
When I was throwing around a baseball earlier, he came out to make sure that we weren't breaking any windows.
He doesn't like people smoking cigarettes within 10 feet of the door, I tell you what.
I'm just actually taking a look at his Twitter picture now.
What do you guys think?
Wow.
Who's this girl he's with?
The girl he's with. Yeah. She's cute.
She's pretty hot.
Yeah. Oh, man. Cute girl.
Nice V-neck.
Yeah, nice V-neck shirt.
Very
she's
nice
got V-neck. Necklace.
Hairless
belt.
Chest. Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Very nice.
That being said, I'd like to plug my own Twitter at this point, Matt44Hayes, if you ever care what I'm talking about.
Yeah. You can follow him. Yeah. Or not.
I'm pretty sweet.
Don't follow me.
JLou underscore sports. I don't really have anything interesting to say.
You can follow Jay Bunkus at Twitter, but all I tweet about is the Sonics.
How much you hate Dwayne Wade recently.
Dwayne Wade, my displeasure for Dwayne Wade and my never-stop attitude to wanting the Sonics to come
back
to
Seattle.
How much
you want to punch people drinking Starbucks?
Whenever Greg Hood posts anything about shaving body hair and the discomfort that it's causing him, I normally retweet it. So if you want to follow me, you can keep up to date with all of the Greg Hood shaving mishaps.
Greg Hood has 100 followers on Twitter. I learned that today.
Yep. Ravi Singar, Ravi underscore security, was his 100th follower today.
100th follower.
Big time milestone.
He actually just tweeted that he now has more followers than the producer of Primetime Sports.
Wow. Greg Hood, vain as always. Now, moving on. From one dominant big man, which was Ravi Singar, to my favorite dominant big man, LSU product, Orlando Magic draftee.
You mean I'm not your favorite big man?
Second favorite big man.
Yes.
Shaquille O'Neal. He retired.
Oh, he was good too.
One of the most, I gotta say, when the news was given to me that Shaq had officially retired, I think that was one of the most heartbreaking experiences I've had since the Sonics left Seattle. One of the more emotional.
I thought he retired 2 years ago.
Oh, God. Why would you have to say such a mean name?
I love Shaq, but Shaq hasn't been Shaq for a while. It's a shame that a lot of the younger generation that follows the NBA now, they know Shaq as the personality.
The big fat guy who...
Shaq versus...
Yeah.
Shaq just kinda dancing with the Jabberwockies.
Trots up and down the court in a very... very leisurely manner, gets hurt a lot, but a really, really cool, funny guy. And no, he is a great player. He is one of the greatest big men. If not, you can make the argument he's the greatest. He's certainly one, if not the most dominant big men of all time. And it's a shame that, I guess it's the same thing with Barkley, that a lot of the people that didn't grow up watching Charles Barkley and just see him on the panel don't realize that there's more to this guy than
a megastar,
than a personality. And I guess that's the same thing that's happening now with Shaq. But no one more dominant, in my opinion, than Shaq in his prime.
Right after I mentioned Bill Russell as the greatest big man of all time and the greatest player, Josh goes, you could argue. So we'll just stay away from that.
I can argue, and I will argue.
We don't want to go here. Shaquille O'Neal, obviously one of the greatest players. I think he's a top 15 guy. Had he not been so fun, he probably would have been better. But would he have been better for the game? Hell no.
The guy was unreal. For the NBA, his personality and just his PR status was miraculous.
Did you see when he retired and he thanked the media and he said that he would really, really miss the time that he spent with the media?
And that's not lip service.
And the only
no, it's not. It's the truth. He loves media. Those guys are his friends. He's built.
He said, "Thank you for being my friend."
Yeah, exactly. I can't believe what a giant he was.
There's no professional athlete with a better media relationship than Shaquille O'Neal.
Obviously, if I ask Giannis Bunkus right now to name me the differences between the NBA and the NHL, that list could go on for a while. We could be here for the next 2-3 hours, right? But for me, the main difference between the NBA and NHL, Shaquille O'Neal. And by that, I mean people like Shaquille O'Neal, because the NBA is infused now with people with personality. Obviously, there's a bunch of duds. There's many duds, as there's always going to be.
You don't think Sidney Crosby is a great personality?
Sidney Crosby, Shaq, a little
He's
bit
a
of a
robot.
Difference. But when you're talking about marketing the game, when you're talking about, for me anyways, why I love the game of basketball, or the league that is the NBA, so much more than I do the NHL, is the personality, is the aspect of fun. And when it comes to sports, that's what sports is. Why do you want to watch something that is going to bore you to tears? And not to say I'm bored to tears all the time by the NHL, but...
The first basketball I ever owned had a big black handprint on it.
The KFC ball?
That's the same
one.
Yeah,
that was a great one. That was a great basketball, that Kentucky Fried Chicken basketball.
Oh, I can't imagine how many they sold.
Shaq's big hand.
Think of all the wonderful products that Shaq has endorsed all over the years. Icy Hot. Nestle's Crunch.
Walmart shoes.
Yep. This man, everything,
he's an icon.
Everything he touches turns to gold.
For me, that's a great point, Josh, about the personality, why you tune in. And that was always one thing about Shaq. And you watch Shaq verse, and you watch him in an interview, you watch him on the court, you watch him joking around with Craig Sager. You felt like he was your buddy.
Shaq
was somebody you truly felt emotionally connected to.
He could read a dictionary, and I would watch him read every word.
He wouldn't breathe in between each word. It would just be one long,
and
like,
it would take him about 4 hours to get through the S's.
And I thought his retirement speech was just such a
spectacular,
such a great reflection of that guy.
I'd like to thank my mom. I'd like to thank my brother. I'd like to thank my dad.
He stopped to receive a fake phone call from the president of the Knicks.
That was great. He opened with that.
The only thing he was going to miss is the free throws.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. It was so funny.
I'll miss watching Shaq fret over free throws a little bit. That was always, I was never a big Laker fan growing up. I was always an adamant Supersonics fan. Didn't actually, I used to cheer against Shaq a lot when his teams were so dominant with the L.A. Lakers. And I used to just absolutely love it when he would sweat at that free throw line and the hack of Shaq that was employed to stop him. But speaking of dominant, like that move, using his big ass to back up on players and then just crush them. Yeah. Do you remember Scott Pollard?
Oh, boy.
Do you remember his career getting ended by Shaquille O'Neal in a miserable, miserable way?
Matty, what's your favorite Shaq moment of all time?
Ooh, that's a good one.
On court or off court?
Either way. Whichever.
My favorite Shaq moment of all time.
Kazam, right?
When Kazam would be in my top five.
The award-winning Kazam.
When he broke the basket is definitely up there, because that was – he changed how they constructed the basket from how he broke two of them. One was way cooler than the other. That would probably be up there when he did that. That was really cool.
I have so many great
Shaq
moments.
You put me on the spot there. I had to pick one, and that was kind of obvious.
I would say one that was good was when he threw the – or was it – Charles Barkley threw the ball at him after they got in a little, a little bit of a kerfuffle. Shaq never really threw them bones, but he definitely got into a little couple of scraps with boys. He had Rodman, Larry Johnson, and who was the most famous one? It wasn't Pollard, was it? It wasn't Pollard. It was someone else. Another big white man. The Sacramento Queens. That was a great
We're not even going to get started on sound bites, are we?
Yeah, no.
I'll give you two. I'll give you my favorite on-court moment and off-court. On-court, it would have to be in the playoffs, that Kobe Bryant to Shaq alley-oop, and then running down the court. Yeah. That was just such an iconic,
iconic
moment. And then off the court, I believe this was also a playoff moment after the game. The post-game interview asking Shaq what the problem was. And at that point, Shaq was pissed off at the officiating and let out a few
curse words.
A few known curse words.
That was with Craig Sager, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it might have been
Craig
Sager.
Always the guy.
Shaq, we are on live. Yeah.
I don't give a shit.
And he legit doesn't.
He legitimately doesn't give a shit.
And he's allowed to, because, like we said, he's the best PR tool the NBA has ever had. So if he's going to slip up once, let him. It's Shaq.
For me, I can't summarize it into one Shaq moment like that.
We should have done a Shaq show.
For me, my favorite Shaq era, anyways, was with Orlando, to tell you the truth. That's when he just grabbed me as an NBA fan, and I was massively on board with him and Anthony Hardaway. I used to, like, the Orlando was huge back then. There was little penny commercials. You remember that?
And, yep.
Oh, man.
What could have been if he stayed there and Penny didn't get hurt?
Penny, also part of one of the most controversial trades in NBA history. He was traded for Chris Webber on draft day. Mm-hmm. But still, that watching that young Shaq, that lean, huge muscle machine, go coast to coast at 7'1", that's the memory that I have. Just never seeing a player did anything like that, and we never will again.
He even addressed that in the press conference when they told him to give the ball up to the guard, and he said, no, I'm doing it my way. And from the get-go, he did it his way, and he did it perfect.
Yep.
We'll miss you, Shaq. We really will.
We really will. And on that note, Shaq, we're just going to try to get by without you, buddy. But, hell, it's going to be rough. We're going to miss Shaq. Here's to you. Here's to Lib Kweli. Yeah. Yeah. We sell crack to our own out the back of our homes. You smell the musk of the dusk and the crack of the dawn. We go through episodes too, like Attack of the Clones. Until we break a bag and you hear the crack of the bone.
just to get by, just to get by, just to get by. We commute to computers, spirits stay mute while your ego spread rumors. We survivalists turn to consumers. Just to get by, just to get by, just to get by, just to get by. You ask why some people gotta live in a trailer, cause like a sailor, I paint a picture with a pen like Norman Mailer. Me and Weather raised three daughters all by herself with no help. I think about the struggle and I find the strength of myself. These words melt in my mouth, they hot like the jail cell in the south before my nigga core bailed me out. But to get by, just to get by, just to get by, just to get by. We do or die like best stars, see the red sky, the window of the red eye, let the lead fly, so G-Rap shit, living the lead die. Smoke trees and we stay drunk. Yo, our activism attacking the system. The blacks and Latins in prison. Numbers in prison. They victim black in the vision. Shit and all they got is rapping to listen to. I let them know we missing you. Your love is unconditional. Even when the condition is critical. When the living is miserable. Your position is pivotal. I ain't bold in you now. Why would I lie? Just to get by. Just to get by. To get fly. The TV got us reaching for stars. Not the ones between Venus and Mars. The ones to be reading for parts. Penis enlarged, Saturday, Sunday, Sunday morning at the feet of the Father. They need something to rely on. We get high on all types of drugs. When all you really need is love.
Just to get by, just to get by, just to get by, just to get by.
Pants sing like John Lennon. Imagine all the people watch me rock like Paul McCartney from now until the last Beatles drop.
What?
Man, I love that song. It's a great song. I saw it live, too. I've seen Tulib. Yeah. So, anyways, we're back. This is Full Court Press. Your
Hi,
favorite
everybody.
Basketball show.
FCP.
FCP. Your one-stop shop for all your hoops talk.
You're getting better at saying that.
I am getting better at saying that. I've practiced it a lot. Actually, I used to practice a lot at home, and then I used to come
in the
here.
Mirror?
Yeah, I used to come in here, and I used to try it.
Have you caught
horrible.
Him doing that, Maddie?
No, he's never caught me doing that.
No, not quite yet.
No, we weren't living together when I was still practicing that.
You weren't significant others at
no,
that point?
No, we weren't.
No.
Although yesterday, Maddie and I, Matt came home. He texted me at like, I don't know, what time did you get home last night? Like 11:30, midnight?
Oh, yeah. It was
Matt and I are roommates in a heterosexual way, by the way.
Yeah, sure.
For all of you wondering.
It was around 11.
It was around 11, and he texts me, and he says...
Called you.
Yeah, he calls me. He goes, come out on the balcony. And I'm like, okay. I'm running on our little balcony there, and... There's this noise. It's a ee, ee, ee. And he yells at me. He's like, look up. There's a baby raccoon trapped on the top of our fence. It couldn't get down. And there's this mother raccoon going like ape crazy, running around the fence, trying to get its baby down. And this thing was up there for, what do you think, like a good 30, 45 minutes? Just squealing.
So Giannis went in and got his gun?
No.
No, I think he got off all right. But for listeners out there, if you do have raccoon problems, put up a chain link fence. Those things cannot figure those out. This
also,
guy struggled.
For all those in the law enforcement agency out there, I no longer own any weapons.
Some more lip
or
service.
Ammo. Or any ammo. Anyways, let's get back to some
now
basketball
for a transition.
Talk. Let's speaking of things that get fired, Jay Tram.
Oh!
Well played, sir.
I know we weren't supposed to be yelling into the mics, but
things that get fired. Fired, removed, or just relocated within the organization.
He is
that's
depressing for him anyways. It's got to be. You get fired and, oh, yeah, well.
He's getting the Maurice Richard treatment.
Well, we'll bring you back in some capacity. Exactly. You can clean the toilets. And
Maurice Richard treatment. It's like, okay, well, yeah, that's great. Your career's done. Now go sit in that corner and be quiet and don't talk to anybody. Just sit there.
I'm sure they'll use him a little bit
more than that. I'm just playing around. That being said, Jay Triano, two seasons?
Thanks, Jay.
He came in when as the interim? Is it two and a half?
When Sam was gone, right?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
When Sam left, Jay came in. Canadian guy. Had been with the Canadian national team and now
brought in a real
American
tough spot.
National team as an assistant. Yeah, a tough spot.
I don't think anybody
sure.
expected him to really succeed.
No, and it's tough to criticize him, and that's why I'm legitimately surprised that they let him go, because how can you
evaluate... So let's start there. Good move or bad?
I don't know that it's good or bad necessarily. I'm just surprised that it happened and it happened now. I figured this team is not ready yet. So when I hear Brian Colangelo say, okay, I want to bring in an experienced guy, well, why are you bringing an experienced guy? Is that going to make a difference at this point? Is that going to put them over the hump? At this point, and I guess there are two ways of looking at it. Do you want to bring in an experienced guy that can help tutor a lot of these young guys, or do you want to bring in a young coach that can grow with these young guys? We've seen things work both ways, and we've seen it not work. We saw Larry Brown, an experienced coach, with a younger Knicks team a few years ago, and that exploded in their face.
It's horrible.
So that didn't work. But then you see teams like Oklahoma City who say, okay, we have a young nucleus. Let's bring in a young coach in Scott Brooks, and that worked. But it's also
although he got kind of a little bit ripped down the stretch there.
Well. I'm not going to hate on him for what happened
a
couple weeks ago when overall
Scott Brooks has been an inexperienced coach that's had great results. Yep. I understand what you
mean. So, again, there's different variations of the experienced coach, let's say. I've heard all sorts of rumblings anywhere from Jeff Van Gundy, which I think would be a poor decision.
Jeff, it won't be him because
he
wants
another
year in the
booth. Would be a poor decision. Neither of those guys, I think, would even come here.
Oh,
but
please.
Then there are experienced guys that have some experience, like a Lawrence Frank, who maybe would be a better option, who has worked with some younger teams.
I like that you haven't said
well,
my
Maddie,
guy yet.
Maddie has a list. So
I have a list of
Dwayne Casey. Is he on your list?
You have Dwayne?
Well, no.
Dwayne Casey, by the way, assistant with the Seattle Supersonics.
I haven't named anyone on your list of
no. Oh, no, you named two that not necessarily, I don't think they will come.
Okay,
Jeff
so hold
Van Gundy
on. Give us the
one.
List.
Jeff
list.
Van Gundy being one.
First of all, I'd like to eliminate Jeff Van Gundy's name. He's already stated that he'd like to stay being a play-by-play guy for another year at least.
Great play-by-play
the only
play
reason
guy.
I mentioned him.
Fantastic. He's one of the best.
The only reason I mentioned him, defensive-minded coach, obviously a winner,
yep.
Would be really pricey. That's a problem. And like you said, I don't know if he's committed to coaching. Rick Eilman, again, a winner. He's coached for two decades. But again, I don't like him.
I don't know how much.
Two
other guys.
You're
playing the winner tag a little loosely.
Okay,
here.
Two other guys that
Phil
I
Jackson?
Thought might work. Phil Jackson, no.
Doc
but
Rivers.
There is a guy who got passed
Red
over for Phil Jackson's job that might want a head coaching job. If
ooh,
Brian Shaw. They could get him. But here's the guy.
But that doesn't fit the experience, Bill.
Well, here's the guy that I want to go
Casey,
with.
Really, but
there was a team. Right. There was a team that was very young and did not make the playoffs that got a coach. Who brought them along. They had a lot of strong guard play, and his name's Mike Woodson. And they fired him from Atlanta. But you remember the Atlanta Hawks before he got there. They were young. They had talent, and they needed coaching. And now Mike Woodson's free. And
he's not the coach that led them into that like epic playoff beating that they got.
He led
Atlanta,
them to the
right?
playoffs, though.
But then he also led them to the worst disparity between playoff teams in the history of the game.
Okay,
that coach?
But you're looking way into the
who's
future.
All his players quit on him in the most
six,
important games of the year? That
six,
coach?
Six
want?
Seasons, three playoff appearances, and he coached a young team to that point.
Three first-round exits, including one that was the most embarrassing debacle of all time.
I knew no
he
matter
looks
what,
like something from those Nutty Professor movies.
Yeah,
I can't take him seriously. Yeah.
I knew no matter
I'm
what
sorry,
name
Maddie.
I said, Giannis would shoot it down.
Your list is trash.
Yeah, you're me. You're see, that wasn't me. That was Josh that said that.
You started it.
You're just riling me up. I'm too impressionable.
Yeah. Who do you guys have?
I think Lawrence Frank is the ideal option. I think it's a nice mix between
the two. Yeah.
The two, like I said, he's looking apparently for a defensive coach and an experienced coach, and I don't think it's too wise to go especially in either direction. You don't want a super experienced coach because you don't want a guy that's coming in that's going to lay down the law and ruin the progress that a lot of these young guys made
last year. So you don't want somebody too old. And then you don't want somebody too defensive because, let's face it, this isn't the most defensive team right now. You want to instill a defensive mindset in these people, but you don't want a drill sergeant. You remember what happened with Kevin O'Neill.
Yes. Yep.
So somebody like Lawrence Frank, who's still young.
What's still happening with Kevin O'Neill?
He was a head coach in the league, he was the youngest head coach, and he's only a few years older than that now. So I think he can still relate to a lot of these younger guys.
I like that pick.
And he
it's a flashy
he had
pick.
A defensive team in New Jersey, but they were also offensively capable. So I think he'd be a nice fit. And that's what it's about, really, right now.
Yeah,
it's about finding
the
right
teams.
Fit.
Yeah, because these Raptors aren't – it doesn't matter what – Phil Jackson could come coach the Raptors next year. They're not going to win.
Well,
it doesn't matter.
Yeah, but he won't.
So, yeah, I'm just using an example.
Oh, yeah.
They're not
– The coach
you hire this year is not going to make big changes next year. It may not even be the year after that. You're looking a couple years down the road and what you can build.
There's one notable absentee that we've left off this list of coaching and discussions, and I know it's –
Sam Mitchell.
Painfully clear. Yes. Well, Sam Mitchell, of course.
The,
return of the king.
Please don't say Michael Curry.
No, but really, there was the other big...
Oh,
it wasn't
yes,
a firing.
Yes.
It wasn't
yes.
a firing, but he stepped down. Donnie Walsh steps down, right?
Because
he said they wanted commitment and he wanted complete control of basketball operations there. They were not willing to give them to him. And despite being the man that brought in Amari Stoudemire, he did fail the LeBron sweepstakes, but he also managed to acquire Carmelo Anthony, which was a major coup for them. Donnie Walsh, no longer president and GM of the New York Knicks, which, of course, opens the door for D'Antoni to exit through. The guy was brought in there, and he's even stated that he was very close to Donnie Walsh, very disappointed to see him go. Walsh often publicly stood up for what were D'Antoni's first 2 years with the Knicks, which were atrocious, if you can remember. D'Antoni went from being on a Suns team loaded with talent, winning 60 games a year, to a Knicks team that couldn't scrounge out 25.
Which I said at the time was a terrible move for his career.
Oh, it was. The thing was, though, is that Walsh continuously asked him to be patient and said that one day he would surround him with the pieces that would be correct. And now it seems
which
like
he
Walsh
has, and he's
got
no longer
the pieces.
Yeah.
And now D'Antoni will get exited. That would have been a good shot clock question. Would be who would get the more unfair treatment, Brian Shaw or Mike D'Antoni at this point. But really, what is there any possibility that Mike D'Antoni gets lifted out of that New York job right now and shipped over to his ex-GM in Brian Colangelo, who's just
not
re-upped 2 years with the Toronto Raptors?
If you want a defensive-minded coach in Toronto.
That doesn't go with that, but it goes with experienced.
Oh, that's true.
And you can get a defensive coordinator at a much cheaper price than you can get.
D'Antoni's made it very clear that his teams are not – they don't execute off of their defense. They run, they gun, they shoot.
But if you look at the Raptors team that they actually have right now.
I'm just looking at what Colangelo said.
I think he would be
a great coach.
I'm just saying if you look at what Colangelo has assembled as a team for the Raptors right now, they're not a defensive team. Like they're
oh,
just,
no, they're not.
They're not.
Whether
they,
he wants
they don't
them
have
to
anybody
or not.
On their team that other than maybe Ed Davis that you could really
no,
consider.
But the problem is they're not an offensive team
no,
either.
They're
in that
they were stat chasers this year. Like they were horrible to watch. They were stat chasing.
But the thing about being a run-and-gun team, which we've seen from the Suns, and we've also seen the lesser version from the Warriors over the last few years, is if you're going to do that, you have to do it as well as possible. You have to be the best at it. You can't just do a half-assed job of trying to outscore people because you won't. If you're going to go with that mindset, you have to be the best at it. And the Raptors, I don't think, have the pieces to do that. So you
they
bring
really
in
don't.
A, no.
To be a run-and-gun team, you have to be able to gun, and we don't have any guys that can score like that. They don't have shooters.
No.
So
they
shooters so much. To. I just think that we have decent or the Raptors have a decent transition team.
Oh, I absolutely agree. When you get DeRozan out on the wing.
And I agree with what Josh is saying wholeheartedly, and I think that Bill Simmons does as well because he's been clamoring
for
Mike
D'Antoni.
Oh, there's
the Bill Simmons mention of the episode. It only came
it came very close.
53
minutes
in.
Late. But Bill Simmons, you know he says it. He wants to trade Mike D'Antoni. He wants him to go to Golden State, right? He does. He feels like that guy, that's where they could be the best running gun.
No, absolutely. Yeah. Listen, when you're a general manager, you have a decision to make as far as which direction your team is going to go in, and you can do that one of two ways. You either bring in the players that's going to decide what direction your team goes in, or you bring in a coach that's going to instill that mindset. And right now, the collection of talent that they have in Toronto, although there is some talent, there's not enough. Yeah. There's not enough to put them in a certain direction as far as defensive, offensive, run and gun, whatever. So it looks like the way that Brian Colangelo is going to build at this point is to bring in a coach, instill a mindset there. That's why I don't know that the D'Antoni move is the way to go. I'm a little bit skeptical about whether or not he's even out the door in New York. I think that
I don't think a new president would want to bring in his own guy, though, his own philosophy?
Especially since they're so close.
It also depends on who that president is. They're
well on their way to becoming what they intended to be, and I think D'Antoni needs to stay at this point.
Oh, really? Because I think if Mike D'Antoni stays, then Amari Stoudemire has 2 years left max in his career. The way that he runs that offense, and he runs Amari ragged for an 82-game schedule with that offense and Amari's micro-fracture surgery knees. Ooh.
I'm going to say one thing before we move on about the Raptors' position or the opening that's there now, in addition to what I've already said. I just feel bad for whoever does step in. And we talked about how bad we felt for Jay Triano and what he's had to work with over the last few years. Well, things aren't going to be any better the next couple of years. So I do feel bad for whoever they bring in to take a spot now where there's still going to be some losing to be had.
I think it'll be a bit better than Triano's because you don't have that big Chris Bosh problem looming right in your face.
This is why I think it's foolish to bring in an experienced guy, because you bring an experienced guy now, he goes through a couple years of losing, and one of two things happen. Either he gets tired of that losing and leaves, or
his expectations will be too high.
When things don't go right, who's the first person everyone blames?
Coach.
The coach. So they bring in an experienced guy. The coach is an easier act. So in 2 years from now, after a couple more losing seasons, probably, and they bring in an experienced guy, it's almost a waste, because what's going to happen to that experienced guy in 2 years from now? That's why it's almost easier to bring in another Jay Triano or a young guy who, once some more losing goes down in the next couple of years, at least it'll be an easy act.
Whatever coach they bring in has to be very understanding of what role he needs to play in this team's development.
I was going to say, that's the counter to your argument, is that you bring in an experienced coach, he might be more patient. He's already seen what it takes to get to the top. He's already seen the ebb and flow of the NBA. He understands it more concisely. He doesn't need to act or be more reactionary, whereas a young coach could get really frustrated with one losing season because he feels like this is his entire body of work. If you're a different coach and you have other work to reference back to, and the Raptors' job doesn't absolutely kill you, I think it could go either way. I think if you find it's just about right fit at this point. Colangelo has to do his due diligence and find the Raptors someone that can give them a competitive balance between defense and offense, and that will actually motivate them. Because Lord loves Jay. I don't think the Raptors could have won any more games than with the talent they had this year.
No.
That being said, it was the right move to let Jay Triano go. Those guys did stat chase this year. They did not commit to playing defense for over, 10 seconds in the entire 82-game season. It was tough basketball to watch. It really was. And if you want to put meat in the seats, you're going to have to put a different philosophy behind there. And I don't think it's Jay, even though as entertaining as he is, I thought the Team USA stuff
is he entertaining?
Great. He is. Do you ever see his trick shots during practice?
He's all right.
I think he's pretty.
I'm going to go back into the Raptors history books here.
Also, he's Terry Fox's hero, which goes very far in my books.
I heard him likened to Pinball Clemens in Toronto, where he's just loved by pretty much anybody.
He's a good guy. He's a stand-up guy. Really, the only point that I can look back and remember where the Raptors were consistently successful for a decent period of time, they used a formula that I think that they should go back to, and that's bring in a guy like Butch Carter. I'm not saying they should bring Butch Carter. A young guy, a guy that's hungry for victories, a guy that's going to work with these young guys, push them, get the most out of them. And then when the Raptors are on the cusp of making that jump, that next step, that's when you bring in your Lenny Wilkins. And again, I'm not saying Lenny Wilkins because I hate Lenny Wilkins. But that's when you
I stab through my supersonic heart.
Terrible coach. Horrible.
Horrible coach. He had the most wins of all time.
Yeah, you stick around long enough, you're going to get a lot of
most losses.
He's also a great NBA champion on the Seattle Supersonics.
He's also a decrepit old man. Anyways.
Lifetime Achievement Award winner gets dragged through the mud on this show.
Anyways.
Josh Lewinberg is hateful.
Oh, man.
It's Monday. You know how I get on Mondays. That's when you bring in your experienced coach in the mold of a decrepit old man when you're on that cusp of winning. Right now is when you bring in your young dude who's going to, I don't know, what did Butch Carter do? Call out Marcus Camby. I think there was some sexual harassment going on there, too.
He promised Marcus Camby to be the cornerstone of the franchise and traded him a week later.
I loved Butch Carter.
Yeah, Butch Carter wasn't so bad. Well, I guess it wasn't so bad hanging out with you guys either this week. But
that's all right.
We're getting to that,
I'll see you at home,
buddy. Hourly point. Yeah, actually, I'm going for a pupusa dinner.
I don't know what that is.
At Braden's.
It's pupusa.
Pupusa sounds made up.
No, pupusas is like this delicious.
He's Greek?
His girlfriend Carolina. No, she's from El Salvador.
Oh, it's a person. I thought you meant
El Salvadorian dish. No, not pupusas.
Is
the person.
Is Carolina
this
a friend of yours?
Yes, they're both friends of mine. They're great friends of mine.
Pupusa is a friend of yours.
Pupusa is a friend of my stomach.
That's the food.
Which one is the person?
Carolina and Braden.
Carolina and Braden, they're making pupusa.
Making pupusa for me tonight.
So pupusa is not making you Carolina for
dinner. No, I got it. That's the wrong way. You got it all backwards.
I see. It's very confusing.
Yeah, pupusa really is delicious, and I suggest it's like a bean pancake.
Oh, I had that. I'll
look into
it.
It was delicious. It was like actually some coleslaw pretty good. Material.
What's its heritage?
El Salvador.
El Salvador.
El Salvador.
Okay.
Yeah, it's...
It's El Salvadorian?
El Salvadorian.
Well, fine.
Yes,
I'll see you at home later, then.
Yeah, you will see me at home later. All right. Well, you know what? Let's go out on a little shack today, shall we?
Oh, please.
And since we started off the show with Wu-Tang, we'll click it with a little bit of Shaq featuring Wu-Tang. I've never heard this song before, so...
Oh, wonderful.
So if it sucks, it sucks. But you know what?
If it sucks, you have something to apologize for next week.
There we go.
Actually, I have lots of things to apologize for next week, though. But here's Shaq featuring Wu-Tang.
Peace.
No hooks.
Later.
Later, later.
Just get like a splinter. The decimo. Let's have a festival. Wu-Tang killer bees. When you intellectual styles break your mind. Shine, shine.
You don't need no hook. You don't need no hook. You don't need no hook. You don't need no hook.
See, sometimes you must let yourself be free.
No hook. No hook.
Have your ideology. Come and see.
The Shaq attack has risen. Roll call 3 p.m. This is Twism. Always and forever, forever always attack. I bring favor to the air like Craig Mack. Life's a B and then your D. Refer to Nasty Nas, Illmatic, CD number 3 static. You don't want none, you best to keep looking. A-E-I-O, use the ass whooping. You're tooking into clearing present danger. I'm a perfect stranger, quick to rearranger. Outlook, so look out, so hit me comes. Quick to beat you down like the RZA on the drums. Change my name like Prince, punks be trembling. My name ain't Shaq no more. Call me Superman Emblem. March gets set, go left. The Shaq, the RZA. Get ready for the meth. We don't need no hook.
No,
we don't
hook.
Need no hook.
We don't need
no hook.
No hook.
We don't need.
We don't need no hook.
We don't need no hook. Check me, danger zone, coming mad back, terror dome, like whatever we can get it on, break them back, I'ma set it, yeah, who that dirty rat, bring them here, to the mind benders, the death sender to your ear, method, what up, hookers, hood rats are no goodness, if he decal, breaking rims with the 7-footer, Shaq, bring it to the front, now bring it back, to the head black, and when my soul train hits the track, target, the billboard, chart the rate, we stop it, the whole industry is gassed up, and now they fight it, my object is destruction, for percussion, rhymes I'm busting, got your whole block ducking. Damn, the end is here, apocalypse now. Getting shot, who's the working at?
See, what we don't need is a hook.
We don't need no hooks. No hooks. Wu-Tang.
What?
Shaq Diesel.
We don't need no hook.
Twizzle.
No hook.
Raj and Lilla Vax.
We don't need no hooks.
Luna Nimla.
We don't need no hooks.
No hooks. No
hooks.
Respect to the Wu-Tang and the old